Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us. Before we talk to Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star, Nate Buchady has some information for us.
Yeah, we just heard Gary talking about the flooding out at the golf course at Lionsgate. Stephen and our poor friend Kelly Eddy, who's doing a great job with the event, they're scrambling right now, asked us to pass this announcement along that today's round is being suspended until Friday. So now round one will be on Friday, round two on Saturday, rounds three and four will both be on Sunday. All tickets can be redeemed the following day, so no worries there. But so if you were planning on going to the Digital Ally Open today, it is suspended and everything is basically moved back one day, and they'll play two rounds on Sunday. So sorry for folks that were planning to go out there today, but as you can understand, there's flooding all over the city today. The golf course is no exception. The action will start in the Digital Ally Open tomorrow, Stephen.
Now let's talk some baseball with Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star. Rustin, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Stephen. I'm doing well. I'm walking through the Detroit airport, so if I'm distracted, that's why. But I'm doing well. What's going on?
Oh, you know what? Plenty's going on, and there is so much to talk about just from the game last night. So let's start there. The Royals win 16-2. That's eight in a row. They're now 53-47. Eric Hosmer had the best night of his career at the plate. But let's start with Bruce Rondon hitting Mike Moustakas, and then the bench is cleared. Moose was mad. Danny Duffy was extremely angry, and there was a gold mine of quotes, Rustin Dodd, that you were able to get after the game. So tell me what you thought when you saw it, and then what the Royals' reaction was when you talked to him after what Bruce Rondon did.
Yeah, well, I think the general vibe or the reaction I got from the clubhouse, I think there was certainly some anger in the moment, and you saw how Danny Duffy reacted in the moment. But I think once Mike Moustakas wasn't hurt, it was more sort of frustration and confusion with why he needed to hit Moustakas in that moment. I guess you could debate the unwritten rules of baseball. Bruce Rondon didn't talk after the game, so we still don't know his motivations. Not that he would have admitted to intentionally hitting a batter anyways, but even if you're talking about the unwritten rules of a guy scoring from second, you know, when you're up 11 runs in the ninth inning, you know, the Royals didn't really think that merited a beating. I mean, Lorenzo Cain can score from second on pretty much any single. And Eric Hosmer said, you know, would have been showing him up even more if he just stopped there when he could have scored easily. It didn't seem like there was, something where the Royals were really fired up after the game, although Danny Duffy was still a little bit upset. We sort of approached him after the game, and it's obviously it's unusual for a starting pitcher who didn't pitch that day to have to talk to the media, but he'd been kind of clear on the TV broadcast and the images of him being really upset. So we sort of approached him and said, hey, can we talk to you for a few seconds? And he just kind of said his quotes and was just like, you know, that's kind of all I got. I think his quote was something like, if he doesn't want to pitch in situations that aren't sexy, then he needs to, they should just send his butt home. And I think that was maybe the most frustrating thing for the Royals was that, you know, it was just a blowout game, and they felt like Rondon was just sort of out there not competing, and then obviously hit Moustakas.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, that's just taking the easy way out, you know? I'll get myself ejected from this game. I don't want to be pitching out here anyway. You know, the idea, the unwritten rules of baseball have so many absurdities to them, as if there is a run total where you should stop trying to play the game. And like you talked about the idea of scoring from second base by Lorenzo Cain, I think it was Sparky Anderson whose line was, if you promise to stop trying to score, then fine. And look, yeah, the Royals were up by an insurmountable lead, it seems, at that point. But we've seen teams have huge comebacks in games. You play the game until the game is over. And the idea that in any other sport that you would take what is really the equivalent of a cheap shot, throwing a baseball at somebody on purpose because they're playing the game is absurd. Can we all agree on that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Was there a question in there?
Yeah, well, the question was, can we agree on that? And
sure.
The answer was yes, apparently. So, okay.
Okay. Rustin Dodd joins us from the Kansas City Star. All right, Rustin, Eric Hosmer with just a terrific night at the plate. I mean, five hits, five runs scored, six ribbies, and including a grand slam and a stolen base. I mean, he's on fire right now. Last night was terrific, but he's been really good for a long stretch of time. What did Haas have to say after the game and just your reaction to the night of the plate and how he's been swinging the bat over the last several weeks?
Yeah, well, I mean, he pointed out firstly that, you know, his first three hits of the night were not exactly barreled up. I think his first infield single was like a little chop or like blooper that bounced in front of Nick Castellanos at third base and he couldn't field it. And then he pulled a single through the right side and then there were, I have to do what the other one was. But they weren't exactly, you know, laser hits, but he said he started feeling better as the night went on. But yeah, if you just look at his numbers for the season, you know, and if you look at these sort of the advanced statistics, since May 1st, I think he's hitting over 340, and this was before last night, so I think he's probably up back towards 345 or 350 since May 1st with a, you know, on-base percentage over 400 and slugging well over 500 during that time span. I mean, that's basically, he's been one of the best five or six hitters in baseball since May 1st after his April when he just really couldn't get anything going. And also, you know, I think we pay so much attention to the home runs that Mike Moustakas has hit this year, and for good reason. I mean, he's going to smash the franchise record and do things we've never really seen before in a Royals uniform. But, I mean, you can make the argument if you just look at the advanced numbers, the OPS, the adjusted OPS, Eric Hosmer is having a better offensive season than Mike Moustakas, even with, you know, in April where he didn't hit. You know, there's, I think, the OPS plus, you know, statistic, which is like adjusted for ballpark and league and all those sort of things. Eric Hosmer has a higher OPS plus than Mike Moustakas this season. So I think this is more and more, you know, his best overall season in a Royals uniform. And Ned Yost said as much even before the game yesterday. And I think the question I'm curious is that Eric Hosmer has gotten hot before. I don't know if he's ever been this hot for this long, and I'm curious to see if he can sustain it for the entire season. Because, you know, if you remember, his numbers during the first half last year were all-star level, and he sort of faded in the second half. But right now, we haven't really, aside from the April, we haven't really seen any signs that he's not going to continue this.
Yeah, you're looking at a guy who's on base percentage, and we should count that. That matters. It's almost 70 points higher than Moustakas. And at 27 years old, it's not without, it shouldn't be too outlandish to think that he would have his best year as a Kansas City Royal, is it?
No, I mean, I think he's still ascending. And, you know, if you look at his numbers, you know, a lot of times, you know, the sabermetric crowd will look at sort of the full body of work over his career. And if you look at his career numbers, they're not very good, especially for a first baseman. When I say not very good, I mean relative to other first basemen who are, you know, big-time run producers. But if you look at, like, individual seasons, he was really good in 2015. He was really good in 2013. It's been those other years where he's sort of struggled and hasn't been as consistent. So he has had, you know, great offensive seasons. When you put them all together, it doesn't look as good, I think, on the full resume. And, you know, this is an question that I will never be able to answer, but the advanced numbers suggest that he is not a, you know, elite first baseman defensively, which I think that in the past you could sort of debate that, but I think anybody who's watched him at first base this year on a consistent basis has there's no way you could come away from his season that he's had at first base to been anything other than, you know, one of the best defenders in the league.
Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star is our guest. All right, Rustin, let's talk about the trade that was made with the San Diego Padres, the Royals acquiring Trevor Cahill and Ryan Buchter and Brandon Maurer. Tell me what you think their roles will be moving forward. Cahill is scheduled to start against Boston, but how do Buchter and Maurer fit into the bullpen? And do you think the Royals are still looking to make another deal?
Yeah, so I think obviously Cahill's going to slide in the rotation. That's pretty obvious. I am curious to see how Ned Yost uses these two relievers. I think for now you're going to see Maurer and Buchter sort of mixed in with that sort of combination of Peter Moylan, Scott Alexander, and Mike Minor in terms of sort of that bridge in the sixth and seventh. And then also on days where, like last night, where Kelvin Herrera was not even available because I think he pitched three straight days and four or five. On a day like last night, Maurer could have closed, Soria could have closed. I feel like they have more options on days where guys are not available in the back end. I do think that I'm curious to see how these guys perform in terms of is Joaquin Soria your eighth inning guy as you get into September and the postseason. I think that's obviously he's pitched well in spurts. He's had his moments, but I think you can't answer that question right now. You got to let these guys perform. But I just wonder if somebody like Maurer could potentially be an eighth inning guy. I mean, he closed in San Diego. His ERA is not very pretty because he had some blowups. So I don't think you just slot him in there. But I wonder if there is, whether it's a combination of guys or you look at these guys and see if you can maybe slide Joaquin Soria more into a seventh inning role down the stretch. But I don't think you can answer that today, but I think that's maybe something that the Royals will sort of sort through over the next month.
Rustin, yesterday we had Dayton Moore on the show and asked him about the possibility of making more trades before the deadline, and he said that nothing is close right now. They're not close to any deals, but they are being active. Are you hearing any buzz around baseball about the Royals' activity even after making this trade? Are they going to try to pull something else off over the last 4 days before the non-waiver deadline expires?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, they were obviously linked to Francisco Liriano. I'm not sure if that makes sense logistically or roster-wise. I mean, he hasn't been great this season. But more so, I'm not sure you need another left-hander out of the bullpen if that's where he's pitching. And I guess you could slide him into the starting rotation. You do have Cahill now. It would give you more depth. I think the Royals are still looking, and if there's a reason why a deal might get done, it's because they didn't necessarily give all that up all that much to get the guys they did from San Diego. I mean, they gave up Matt Strom, which could potentially hurt, but they didn't necessarily take anything out of their minor league system, which is thin, and we all know that, but they still have some pieces that they could play around with if they were potentially looking for like a veteran bat or some, you know, like maybe a backup outfielder that with some speed, you know, somebody, a guy like that could be available. So we shall see. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if they made another deal just because once they seem to get in the frame of mind one way or another, they tend to seem to, if they're aggressive, then they kind of go aggressive all the way. And if they stand pat, they send this stand pat. And so it wouldn't shock me if they made another move before the deadline.
Rustin Dodd is our guest. Rustin, we asked Dayton Moore yesterday if even he was surprised about the unbelievable production that the Royals have received from Whit Merrifield on top of that lineup. And you talk about a guy that's been hot. I mean, he goes 3-for-7 last night. He's hitting 344 over his last seven games, 333 over his last 14 games. He's already in double-digit home runs, 16 steals. He's hitting close to 300 for the season across the board. I mean, that's all-star level production for a second baseman. Are you surprised? I mean, you got to be a little bit surprised. But what do you make of this? What is Whit Merrifield? I mean, it's hard to say that. Okay, this is the guy he's going to be. But every time I watch him, I'm more and more impressed.
Yeah. I was asking around a little bit this week about, you know, Ned Yost last Sunday said, you know, obviously he pointed out that they left him unprotected in the Rule 5 draft 2 years in a row. And, you know, they did like him. I mean, the Royals will tell you that they thought that he could be a guy that could contribute at the major league level. It was more in terms of, you know, who do you protect? And there's a numbers game, and you can only have 40 on there. And he was, at that time, they projected him as more of a utility guy, but he didn't play shortstop on a regular basis, so that was a knock against him. You know, offensively in the minor leagues, he continued to get better and better. You know, one person pointed out to me that a lot of times when guys are taken out of the college level, which he was from South Carolina, so he would have been 21 when he got into the minor leagues, that teams tend to sort of rush those guys, or not rush them, but they kind of want them to move quickly because of their age. And that the Royals really kind of took their time with Merrifield. He did move about a level per year, but in terms of being a college guy, it wasn't like they were like, okay, this guy needs to be, you know, something by his 24th or 25th birthday. They kind of took it more slowly, and then once he got into the upper levels of minor leagues, they liked his progress, but they weren't necessarily convinced that, you know, he was an everyday player, I guess, based on what they did in the Rule 5 and the other guys they had in their system. But he just continued to get better and better every year by the league. And, you know, about 2 years ago, he sort of had this transformation with his body where he got a lot stronger and put on a little bit of weight. And I don't know if that explains the offensive production, at why it's been better at the major league level. But the Royals say, you know, he's always been one of the most confident players in their system. And, you know, they always felt like, you know, he believed in himself. And so that was almost the most important part, you know, as he got higher and higher in the organization.
All right, Rustin, the Royals are off today, and they open up a series against Boston tomorrow night. And it's going to be an interesting pitching matchup. Varghi going for the Royals against David Price, who is going to be making his first start since the reports that he twice berated former pitching star Dennis Eckersley on the team plane for critical comments. This could be a fun one on Friday in Boston.
I'm excited. I feel like it's going to be a zoo in terms of Boston media, which it always sort of is. But it should be interesting to see how he's received at Fenway Park. And you know, I didn't have time to look this up, but I believe the Royals hit him pretty hard. If I remember correctly, at Fenway last year, I'm remembering a game where the Royals had two home runs in the first inning. I think Eric Hosmer hit one over the monster, and Salvador Perez also went deep. And I feel like that was against David Price, but I might be wrong, so don't quote me on that. But I feel like the Royals, you know, have hit him before. Obviously, they faced him in the postseason a few times, and so it should be an interesting matchup.
I'm remembering a playoff game involving the Royals and David Price. That's very wonderful memories. But Saturday, Trevor Cahill scheduled to start against Rick Porcello. And I know we talked about the plans for the relievers, and Trevor Cahill obviously sliding into the rotation unless the Royals make another move for a starter. But what have they said about Trevor Cahill? What do they like about him? He's had 11 starts, a 3.69 ERA, good strikeout numbers, but he did have a DL stint because of some shoulder issues. He's had success as a starting pitcher. He was a pretty good reliever for the Cubs last year, but what have you heard about Trevor Cahill and why they like him and why they think maybe he can succeed in that fifth spot?
Yeah, the stuff is plus stuff is what you hear. I mean, he's got a sinker that has kind of been his bread and butter for years, and he's got a curveball that has been very good this year, and he also has a changeup. And when he gets into trouble is when, even if you look at his walk numbers, they're a little bit higher, and they can be higher in certain starts. And his sinker apparently moves so much that it's just sort of the pitch that sometimes it moves, you know, out of the strike zone, and he can't control it. The question for me, if you look at his numbers this year, is more where has this been the last few years? You know, he was an all-star in Oakland in 2010, and then went to Arizona and had a couple of strong seasons and then sort of stalled out there. You know, Ian Kennedy suggested that, you know, it's difficult for a sinker baller to throw in Arizona because the air is so thin and you don't get as much movement. So that's one theory why he might have not been a great fit for there. But then once he got out of there, he still sort of was around in the wilderness for a few years with the Dodgers and the Cubs and a few other places. But, you know, he signed with the Padres in the offseason for 1 year, $1.75 million. So, you know, he would have been available in the offseason for a lot of teams. And now, if you look at his numbers and you pair what he's done this season compared to somebody like Oakland's Sonny Gray, they're pretty comparable, at least in the last few months. So not that they are the same caliber of pitcher or at the same point in their careers, but if you're talking about just trying to get a rental and get some production for the next 2 or 3 months, the production that Cahill may give you might not be all that different than what you would get from somebody like Sonny Gray, at least for this season. Obviously, he's under club control for a few more years.
I agree. I like it. Rustin Dodd, thank you so much for the time. I know you're traveling, but enjoy the day off. No game today, and we will talk to you next week. Hopefully, it'll be a fun series to cover in Boston at Fenway Park. Rustin, thanks for the time.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That is Rustin Dodd calling live from the airport in Detroit. How's that airport, fellas? It's a good one?
I haven't spent really much time in the Detroit airport.
It's just like the rest of Detroit.
Ooh.
Sucks.
Ooh.
Wow.
Spent some time with Gus Johnson in that airport.
How was that?
Oh, any time with Gus Johnson is a pure joy.
Jake, hurry up or we're going to miss the plane! Did he do that?
I'm paying $10 for a hamburger. Wow!
Said an employee here at Stony Creek just ran into the bar, seeing if I was in distress or not. I am. Trust, I'm in distress most of my life, but just not right now. You know, but that's fun.
Right.
Right.
He told me about red yeast rice. You ever heard of that?
No. Until right now.
It's an herbal extract. Told me it had similar benefits to Viagra.
Wow!
Yeah, exactly.
Hey! Holy cow!
That's what I take away from my sit down chat with Gus Johnson.
And I'm ready to go again.
Wow!
I don't know what to say anymore. Really,
just my life experiences, man.
You're a fountain of information.
You are.
Is what you are. Really, to me, if I'm Mr. Chad Boger listening to this, I mean, I'm thinking like of a Saturday morning or Sunday morning health and fitness show where you can recommend different extracts and
I haven't tried it. That's just
bone broth.
Well, it sounds like Gus Johnson's word for it.
It sounds like
I don't need that.
It sounds like you.
Trust me, it's not a problem for me, bud.
Should I trust you, bud, or not? What the hell was that?
Mm-hmm.
He just turned into a dock worker, and I trust me, bud. That's
hey,
not
bud,
a problem for me.
Not a problem for me, bud.
Okay, who is? What, mm-hmm. I can't see what's going on there.
What is he doing?
I don't know, but his phone just went off.
Exactly. He goes, whoop.
Yep.
Not mine, his intern's.
Oh, tofu.
Reprimand him back after this on WHB.